Hello everyone, and welcome to minute 26 of season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we hijack our way through the 1974 action classic thriller, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Bubbly from It's Time to Rewind. Welcome back for yet another season, Bubbly.
It's good to be back.
Yeah. You've been missed. But, I figured this time I would try and, get you to actually watch a movie that you've never seen. because if I remember correctly, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, this was the first time that you've ever watched the movie.
Yes, this is the first time I've seen any of the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3s. I hadn't seen the original, and I still haven't seen the either of the remakes.
Okay. Well, you're not missing anything. You're not seeing either of the remakes. you're fine from my perspective. You're fine on that front. So, what do you think? Are you happy that you've now seen it, or are you like, all right, just another movie?
I thought it was pretty great. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. It was, interesting to see all the actors that I recognized, especially like Walter Matthau and Jerry Stiller. And it's funny because I saw his name in the credits and I meant to be looking for him, but I didn't recognize Hector Elizondo whenever we were watching. But I was watching with my wife.
Interesting.
And she recognized him from The Princess Diaries, and she even like pointed it out to me, but I like misunderstood what she was saying, and I didn't realize that she was talking about, oh, that's Joe from The Princess Diaries. And then at the end of the movie, I saw the name again, and I was looking on IMDb, and I was like, oh yeah, that guy was Joe from The Princess Diaries. And she's like, I told you that.
Well, what's interesting then is it means that his disguise actually worked.
Yeah.
Able to surprise you and figure that out. Had you heard about the movie before, or this was
I knew the only thing that I knew about it, I mean just based on the title, was that it was like some sort of heist movie, and that's really all I knew. I didn't know it was a subway car set in New York City. I really didn't know like practically anything about it.
Oh wow! So first of all, I want to thank you for going in blind, and I'm also glad that you enjoyed it. I mean, I can't thank you for enjoying it. when it comes to movie tastes and stuff like that, but I'm very happy to hear that you really enjoyed it. Did your wife enjoy it also, or less so?
Yeah, she liked it too. Yeah.
Okay. Great. That's excellent. I'm so glad that. I'm able to get yet another one of my guests to immerse themselves for the first time in this movie and enjoy it. Were you able to guess any of the any of the twists along the way, or there were things that just happened?
Yeah, I don't remember if I don't think I was really actively looking for twists or surprises until the very end. Like I did, whenever the two transit police were in Mr. Green's apartment, and they were on their way out, I told my wife, he's going to sneeze and that's how they're going to catch him. And then that's like literally the very end of the movie. And then Walter Matthau does that look to camera and then it fades out. So that was so perfect.
Yes, it really is perfect. It's a perfect ending to the way that this movie plays out when you get the famous Gesundheit line. So, mm-hmm. That works too. Wow. Okay. Did you catch the idea of the color names?
Yeah. Whenever they use the color names, I was like, oh, I've seen Reservoir Dogs, so I can tell that's where Quentin Tarantino pulled that from.
That's right. That's right. That's one thing I've said this a lot of times. One of the things I love about Tarantino is that He pulls various things from various movies that most people haven't seen. And so when you're watching a Tarantino movie, you're like, oh wow, that's so amazing that he thought of that idea. But I think that's part of his genius, the fact that he's able to put together all these puzzle pieces that you normally wouldn't have together and create an even better story from that perspective. And just to lift the idea of the names of the characters from this movie is just great. I like the way they do that. All right, excellent. So let's dive into minute 26. So minute 26 begins with Blue finally breaking the silence and ends with Garber trying to gather some info into his head. So, we left things off last week. We were able to get to know a little bit of the hostages a little better, and we also saw the point where Blue sends Danny Doyle off with the rest of the passengers to safety because they don't need that many hostages. It's a little too much of a dangerous situation for them if they have hundreds of hostages as opposed to just only needing to have was it 19, 17,
17.
17, right? I like the way that they do that also. That they're not concerned about the fact that they're releasing all these other hostages. They've been ignoring the control center, the command center. And at this point, Mr. Blue takes the microphone and says, "This is Palom 123 to Command Center. Do you read me?" And we get to see that we're back in the command center, and we see Garber, we see Carell, we see the four Japanese executives all walking around there. Just looking at what's going on. And I love the way that they play this out because it's just random that they're in this room at this exact same time. It doesn't feel planned at all. It's completely random that Garber's there. Garber's going through this terrible routine where he has to give a tour to these four guys, and he's just winging it with the whole thing. And
I one thing that I did like about the movie overall is how they keep introducing these little hiccups to their master plan, and it's spread out and paced really well, just to get that kind of slow flow of these little hiccups here and there on both ends.
and it works both ways for both, the Garber and the good guys and Blue and the bad guys. Where it's sort of a battle of wits where the unexpected keeps happening for both sides. And they have to try and figure out a way to deal with those unexpected hiccups, as you call them. So yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And once again, the continuity here is great because you see in the background the clock says it's 2:10. So we know exactly what time it is. They're doing a really good job of keeping track of how much time is passing through this whole thing. And then so Garber's talking to these executives and he goes, "Okay, we'll leave him alone to his problems this way." And he starts leading them away, meaning that, all right, I don't need to listen to this boring this boring chatter that Coral's gonna have to Corell is gonna have to deal with right now, or whatever it is. And then Carell sits at his desk and turns on the microphone and goes, "Where the hell have you been? What are you trying to do? Screw up the entire railroad single-handedly? I want an explanation, and it better be good." And you can see that he's irate. He's Carell has not he's not taking this easy. He's quite perturbed about the whole thing. But Blue, on the other hand, is completely calm and collected, and he says, "Your train has been taken." And he goes, "Why?" And he goes, "Repeat, your train has been taken." And there is a lot of noise going on in this room, but not so much. I mean, these guys in some shots look like they're sitting on top of one another, but in other shots they look really far away. So you're not even sure, because there isn't a lot of commotion that's going on right now. But Carell then goes, "Hey, shut up in here! Shut up! I said shut up! Everybody, shut it up! Everybody, God damn it!" And then he gets back on the radio and he goes, "Pelham 1-2-3, what do you mean the train has been taken?" And he is asking the right questions here. It works really well. And he goes, "Are you the Motor Man?" He goes, "Negative." "Well, then who are you?" "Nobody's authorized to be in that cab except the lousy motorman. Identify yourself." And then Blue goes, "Listen, train master, your locomotive has been hijacked by a group of heavily armed men." He goes, "It what?" And again, we see that Garber is starting to catch on also about this whole thing. He has half an ear listening to what's going on. And then he says, "We are holding 17 passengers and the conductor hostage in the first car. I'm quite prepared to kill any or all of them if you do not obey my commands to the letter. Have I made my..." And then he gets cut off as he's continuing with his little speech here with the whole thing. So I like the way that they do this. How it just random that Garber's in the room and happens to be bored with his own conversation and therefore overhears this conversation and is like, "Hey, wait a second, I'm intrigued. There's something going on here." It's been a few weeks since he told us all the various things that can happen on trains, and he doesn't mention anything like this. So he's like, "Okay, something intriguing and interesting for me to do." Yeah,
Yeah.
are you familiar with Walter Matthau as an actor? I mean, I know we'll talk later today about your movies, if you've seen him or anything like that, but or you want to keep the spoiler free from me, where you're going to tell me that this is the only Walter Matthau movie you've ever seen. So, all right, well, don't answer the
It's
question. Don't answer the
not the
question.
only one that I've seen, but it's I did struggle to get a list of five movies. So
Okay, well,
I'm not
it's
super
fine.
familiar with them.
It's fine. I mean, anyone who's been listening knows that Jay had one, and that was it. So, and it was this movie. So it's not as if it's impossible for that to happen again, especially for guests who have not, who are less familiar with this movie and with Walter Matthau in general. Makes sense. So this is not the first time, but I think it was last week that they refer to Carell as a train master, the train master. Do you have any idea what the job of a train master is?
No, I've not. It's possible that I've heard the term before, but I've never given any thought to it.
Okay, I mean, it's not like the key master the gatekeeper and all that stuff, but so I actually found two interpretations of what a train master is. First one is that I didn't buy, and therefore I went a little deeper to try and find it. It basically says the train master is the conductor, and I don't it doesn't make any sense. We have Bud, who's the conductor on the train, so he's definitely not the train master, and they keep calling Frank the train master, so there must be something more to it. So I went a little deeper to try and find out what a train master is, and I actually found out that a train master is a railroad employee who manages the day-to-day operations of a specific territory or train yard, ensuring the safe and efficient movement of trains. They're responsible for crew management, compliance with safety regulations, and coordinating train movements, which again fits perfectly with what Frank is doing here. Among their responsibilities are overseeing train operations. The train masters ensure trains run on schedule, coordinating departures and arrivals, and managing train movement within their assigned territory. They deal with crew management. They manage the train crews, including engineers and conductors, ensuring that they're properly trained, qualified, and following procedures. So again, that fits in with what Carell is upset about here, because he's like, "Hey, you're not allowed to be in the cab. That's against regulations, that type of thing." They're in charge of safety enforcement. They play a crucial role in promoting safety, enforcing company policies, and investigating accidents or derailments. They also address customer service issues, ensuring a positive experience for passengers or freight customers, which, okay, that one less is less relevant here. Problem solving. Train masters must be adept at problem solving, addressing unexpected issues like track problems, mechanical failures, or weather-related disruptions. Again, it's perfectly what Frank is doing here. And they also work closely with other departments like the dispatchers and maintenance crews to ensure smooth operations. Basically, in a nutshell, their job is to act as a supervisor, ensuring the safe and efficient flow of trains within their assigned area, which also addresses any operational challenges that arise. Now, obviously, hijacking a train is probably not on the top of their list of the type of things that they normally do, but that's what Frank gets here. He's gonna have to deal with this, So, that works well with the whole thing. One of the things that I like here is that, we see that Carell is starting to deal with this situation, and eventually, we'll see in the next few weeks how he sort of loses the control over the situation. He's been outmaneuvered by Garber, who is looking for something more interesting to do from that perspective. And interestingly enough, it just dawned on me right now, in the 2009 remake with Denzel Washington, Denzel is basically the train master. His name is Garber, but he's not a cop. So I would have to rewatch it, and because I don't really like the movie very much, I'm not running to go rewatch that one so quickly. Again, it's not as bad as Die Hard 5, no question about that. But it's also not as good as this one, which is why I steer clear if I don't need to rewatch it. But I'm pretty sure that he acts as the train master there. I'm pretty sure that's what he does. All right. Did you have anything else that you wanted to mention about this particular minute?
No, I don't think so. This one's, it's mostly dialogue. It just, I mean, it's very much the setup of the rest of the plots. This kind of lets the people, the good guys know about what the situation really is. So this is like really where the plot kind of kicks into high gear.
Exactly. Yeah, things are starting to move at this point. Which is pretty interesting that they did take 26 minutes to lead up to this point. But they did it well. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they keep it very interesting to watch up until this point without a problem. Even though they're giving us 26 minutes of trying to explain what's going on, it doesn't feel as if it drags anything down. The exact opposite. I think it actually helps raise the suspense of everything with the way that they do it. Okay. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called Mafal Monday, where my guests will give their top five Walter Mafal performances. And you hinted earlier that I might not get five, but we'll wait and see. So why don't you start with hopefully your number five or your number four or your number three, whichever one you're at, and work your way up.
Well, I did manage to get to kind of squeeze in five. And my number five is actually a movie that I don't like very much. Let's see, it came out in the 90s, and so I probably would have been a teenager whenever I saw it. I don't think I saw it in theaters, but Dennis the Menace, that was like the time where they were making a lot of comic strips and the TV shows and movies. And that Dennis the Menace, the cartoon, was like one of my least favorites. And I didn't like the comic strip very much whenever I would read the comics and the papers. And I wasn't a big fan of the movie, but I do think that his performance as Mr. Wilson was very good. And then my number four, and this is one that I'm not even 100% sure that I've seen it, but I think I've seen it, and that's Grumpy Old Men. I know that was popular whenever it came out, popular enough for them to get a sequel. But I just don't have very clear memories of it because I haven't seen it since, again, the 90s.
Okay, yeah, another 90s movie.
And my number three, again, this is one that I haven't seen since it was, probably fresh in the video stores, but IQ. I do remember that I've seen that. I don't remember any plot details, but I'm pretty sure I remember thinking that it was a fun movie. And then, getting to my number two, these are ones that I remember a little bit more. I mean, I'm gonna put Pelham 1-2-3 as my number two. I think he is, he's great, but he is kind of the straight man, and I think he's better whenever he has a more comedic role.
Well, he's a
And
straight man in the movie, but he does have a lot of jokes. You know,
yeah,
but
he has
he
some
delivers,
comedy elements.
he delivers the jokes in a very straight fashion. That's the thing. You know, like when
And
he
then
goes,
my
you're gonna make everyone close their eyes and count to 10. You know.
Yeah. It's kind of more of a dry humor.
Yes.
And then my number one is The Bad News Bears. That's such a fun movie. I enjoyed it whenever I was a kid. I watched it again around the time whenever the Billy Bob Thornton remake came out.
That was in
And
2005.
yeah. So that was probably the last time I saw it, but I thought it was, great back then, and I liked the remake. I know a lot of people didn't care for it that much, but I thought it was all right. It wasn't as good as the original, but it was all right.
Okay, that's fair enough. I actually rewatched the original just a few weeks ago. After talking about it with one of my guests, I was like, "Hey, wait a second! I should probably go rewatch that." And I enjoyed it once again so much. It was a very, very good movie. All right, so now we will play our daily game of Name That Remake. So I will spin the wheel, and we will get the year of the original movie plus the year of the remake. That will give you a plot synopsis, a short plot synopsis that hopefully won't completely give it away, but maybe it will. And then you have to try and guess what what movie we're talking about. So the wheel is spinning, and we'll see where it lands. Okay. All right. So the original movie came out in 1984, and the remake came out in 2012. It's a movie about a group of teenagers who witness some world-changing events and decide that they need to step up and try and help out.
84
And
and
2012.
2012. Feel like I should know. And I know 84 is a big movie year too. There's like a lot of great movies that came out in 84.
Think about the synopsis of what I just gave you right now. It's about a group of teenagers who decide to step up after something crazy happens in the world in order to try to help out.
Not getting anything.
Okay, the original movie features so many members of the Brat Pack.
Oh man.
Okay, you know what? I'm gonna read the IMDb synopsis. 2012 remake. The synopsis is a group of teenagers look to save their town from an invasion of North Korean soldiers.
Oh yeah, that would be Red Dawn.
Yes, it would be. All right. I didn't want to read the 1984 synopsis
Yeah.
right away because I would really give it away. It is the dawn of World War III in the Western Mountains of America. A group of teenagers band together to defend their town, their country from and their country from invading Soviet forces. So yeah, I think that one would have really given it away, but that's fine. Perfect. All right. Thank you for playing that. So would you like to tell everyone where they can find Bubba Wee?
Sure, you can find me on all social media where I'm at Bubbleweeds. I'm most active on Threads. That's probably the best way to follow me to keep up with what I'm doing. And one of my newest podcast projects, I feel like I have too many sometimes. But it is called Anthological, and it's an anthology podcast about anthology movies. And this is kind of like a group project, which is probably familiar with the fans of the Movies by Minutes formats. Jim O'Kane did several of those, but in this one, each episode is a different segment of an anthology movie, and each episode is hosted by a different team of hosts. And the first season, which started mid-August, was Fantasia. And the very first episode is, a full-on anthology segment where I got a whole bunch of different people to talk about their favorite anthology clips. And then after that, it is, one episode per segment going through Fantasia. And then once I finish Fantasia, the second season will be going into Creepshow at the end of October. And I hope to, continue that with new episodes releasing every Wednesday. And that's been some fun so far, and looking forward to continuing that and working with, a lot of different people on that.
Oh wow, that's really cool. I submitted part of the Fantasia's anthology, and I actually enjoyed spending the I think I sent you like a 15-minute clip of just talking to myself about about my favorite segments in Fantasia. So yeah, I was surprised that I could talk so long just by myself without someone to rebound off of. But yeah, I guess so. All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a search for Movie Reel Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, moviereelminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviereelminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, achoo.
Gesundheit.